Hello and welcome to the AIPT Comics Podcast, your number one comics podcast on AIPTcomics.com. We're on episode 132. My name is David Brook. Thank you so much for joining us. Nathan is out sick. We hope he feels better soon. If you're not familiar with this show, this is the comic book news, reviews, and interview podcast. We try to get to the heart of the art form of comic books, and it covers everything from Marvel to DC to indie comics too. This week, Steve Orlando joins the show to talk about his Heavy Metal magazine story, Starward. The third chapter appears in the issue next week in Heavy Metal magazine number 308. We talk about Starward quite a bit, but we also talk about his other books as well. He's got Rainbow Bridge, a new OGN from Aftershock coming out soon. And also next week, Extreme Carnage Phage, one of the one-shots for the Marvel event of the summer. We also get into it a little bit about his connections and his collaborations throughout the comics industry. To start every show, we recap the biggest news of the week. And this week, we start with some very incredibly sad news. On Sunday of last week, it was announced via Twitter. Friends of Robson Rocha revealed that DC Comics artist has passed away due to COVID-19 complications. It's incredibly tragic. Robson Rocha has been one of the best artists at DC Comics ever since he broke into the scene. He signed with DC in 2016 exclusively, but has been making comics professionally since 2010. Just incredibly heartbreaking news. Kelly Sue DeConnick took to Twitter to explain what she was feeling at the time on Sunday. She worked with Robson on Aquaman when they did a bit of a relaunch a couple years ago. Many creators were coming out, just totally disheartened and sad. He lives in Brazil, which is not necessarily the best place to be when it comes to COVID-19. Please get vaccinated if you can. Please wear a mask. In our next bit of news, Skybound has got their latest comics convention going on this weekend, July 17th through 18th. This show premieres on Sunday morning, and there will still be panels to attend. This is completely virtual. You can attend the Skybound Entertainment Convention on YouTube, on their Twitch channel, and on their Facebook as well. They have a mix of comics and other types of panels. Probably the most interesting panel of the weekend is a panel between Robert Kirkman, the president of Skybound, and Rob Liefeld. They're going to be having a, as they call it, no holds barred conversation. That should be quite interesting. Creators like Tilly Walden and Margaret Scott are going to be there to talk about their upcoming Skybound Comet graphic novel imprint for young adults that's launching soon. This is yet another comics publisher with a YA push. In fact, later in the show, Steve Orlando talks about how he's actually part of the very first YA push from Aftershock with Rainbow Bridge and the YA push from Heavy Metal Magazine with Starbrand. He knows a lot about this. It's a part of the industry that's just blowing up. There's so much money to be made there. So this is why Marvel and DC and all these other publishers are actually creating very specific imprints to push this type of content. Also in the news, Aftershock Comics revealed this week their 100th comic series, Can PC the Dragon Incident, is set to launch later this year. That's 100 titles, and they just launched in 2015. So in just under 6 years, they've put out 100 different titles. That's a lot of titles for an indie publisher, let me tell you. Considering the fact that there are other indie publishers that haven't hit that number in such a quick time, it shows not only that Aftershock is, you know, highly successful as a creator-owned publisher, but, you know, they're clearly in a healthy place and will continue on. Probably the biggest news of the week comes from DC Comics. They released their full solicitations in their DC Connect magazine. They actually, a few weeks ago, announced that DC Connect is now going to be in print at comic shops. This latest edition reveals their October titles. A print edition will be available in comic book shops July 27th, but right now you can actually download a PDF version on their website and also get the exact same PDF version in their DC Infinite portal or site, I guess you'd call it. This is a really cool way to read solicitations. It's different from Marvel. Marvel is just cover, creators, and then a summary of what the book's about. In this, you get progress shots of the art. You can get lots of variant covers all kind of displayed in a really cool magazine format. Sometimes there's interviews. It's a really slick-looking magazine. I highly recommend you check it out if you're into comics at all. Even if you don't like DC Comics, it's really cool to check out. So, highlights in DC Connect this month for October include Batman the Imposter by Mattson, Tomlin, and Andrea Sorrentino, with colors by Jordi Belair. this book looks like it could be a the Batman tie-in comic. I saw some people on the internet saying the rendering of Bruce Wayne looks a lot like Robert Pattinson. The art, of course, is incredible. Andrea Sorrentino is one of the best in the biz. So I'm really excited for that. It's a shorter series. It's a three-part, but a prestige format DC Black Label book. So it's not part of continuity, but it involves a story where Batman realizes there's an imposter Batman, and he must stop him. It'll likely be just a visual stunning work, and it's really just perfect for the DC Black Label imprint. Also, DC finally revealed another DC horror title called Soul Plumber. This one's set for October as well. And kind of surprised this is only the second DC horror comic from DC that's under their DC horror imprint. This one is by Marcus Parks, Henry Zebrowski, and Ben Kissel. And they are all the hosts of The Last Podcast on the Left. It's got art by John McCree, which is cool. Variant covers from Riley Rossmo and Tom Neely. This one, it's really weird. Let's just listen to the solicitation. Edgar Wiggins, a disgraced former seminary student, is desperate to find a way to answer what he believes is his higher calling. He thinks he's found it in a seminar hosted in a hotel conference room by the Soul Plumbers, who have a machine that could be the secret to delivering souls from Satan. It sounds incredibly wacky. It's definitely not like straight horror by any means. I'm excited to check this out. It's definitely not your run-of-the-mill kind of horror, so it's kind of interesting that this is their second horror book under the DC horror imprint, considering that the first ever DC horror comic was the Conjuring prequel comic series that's still ongoing right now. This feels like an exciting second stab at what this imprint could be all about. Also revealed this week in the solicitations, but also in an article on aptcomics.com, which I highly recommend you check it out because it's very long and dense with pictures. DC is celebrating Wonder Woman's 80th anniversary this year, and they basically are going to go all out for the rest of the year, starting in September. There's a ton of new books announced, including Wonder Woman 80 Years of the Amazon Warrior, which is a 400-plus page hardcover, which is basically the same kind of thing they did for Detective Comics and Action Comics, which will reprint classic stories and important stories, but also have new content with interviews with creators and stars like Gal Gadot and Linda Carter. It's basically a really cool way to honor the character and 80 years of the character. Also in this press release was The Wonderful Woman of the World, a interesting book to say the least. This one's coming out September 28th. It will feature 23 pioneering real-world women from around the world and how they have taken up the mantle Wonder Woman has inspired. And we're talking people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Serena Williams, Beyonce, Malala, Greta Thunberg. It's obviously there are more like celebrity-minded people in this book, but it's honoring women and what the relationship is to Wonder Woman. We don't know a lot about this yet besides the cover and what I just said, but it'll be interesting to track that. Of course, there will also be an 80th anniversary super spectacular for Wonder Woman. DC's been doing this for quite a while at this point now. Joker, Catwoman, Detective Comics, and Green Arrow have all gotten the 80th. Oh, and Robin, too, have all gotten the 80th anniversary treatment. Basically a 100-page anthology with some incredible creators like Mark Waid, Tom King, Steve Orlando, Michael Conrad, Becky Cloonan. Just a fun anthology-style thing. Also, October 5th, we've got Nubia and the Amazons from Vida Ayala, Stephanie Williams, and artist Aletha Martinez. This is really cool. Our cover art is amazing. This is featuring a character from the Infinite Frontier kind of universe, or the new stab from that event style. We don't know much about that besides some quick solicitation text. Wonder Woman Adventures of Young Diana Special will also be released October 12th. This one collects Jordi Belair and Polina Ganoccio's Eisner Award-winning backup stories all in one place for the very first time, which is cool. DC is also giving away comics. On October 19th, you can pick up Wonder Woman number 1 by Greg Rucka and Liam Sharp, Wonder Woman Tempest Tossed, and Diana, Princess of the Amazons. I'm not exactly sure. I guess there are going to be free copies in comic book shops. They weren't exactly sure about that. But all three are quite good, so that's a pretty cool pickup. And then, of course, throughout October, DC highlighted the fact that there is a Wonder Woman number 780, Wonder Woman Back, Black, White, and Gold number 5, and Wonder Girl number 6 all coming out. So lots of celebration around Wonder Woman. Also announced, and maybe this is the biggest news of the DC Connect solicitation magazine, DC vs. Vampires and Task Force Z all coming in October. So this is really neat. So if you don't know, DC put out a DC Zombies alternate universe story called Deceased. Now they've got DC vs. Zombies coming, or sorry, Vampires coming out. This one's by Matthew Rosenberg and James Tynan with art by Otto Schmidt. This is a 12-issue maxi series. So we'll be getting this all the way till next year, if it is monthly. Likely it's monthly. Not a lot is known about this, but if you look at the variant cover art, you can see there's actually like a vampire Batman that looks rad. And then Task Force Z is by Matthew Rosenberg with art by Eddie Burroughs, the great Eddie Burroughs, with inks by Eber Ferrerowicz. This one is basically, you like Suicide Squad, but want it more evil? You get Bane, Man-Bat, the Arkham Knight, relatively new character, Sundowner, and Mr. Bloom, another relatively new character created by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. So this is a super team run by Jason Todd. All very bad, evil people. I wonder how they're controlled. Is it just a brain bomb, or is it more? We will find out. The cover art looks rad, but Eddie Burroughs is one of the best superhero comics today, so that'll be really cool to read, just for the visuals alone. And then we've got Catwoman Lonely City number 1, also announced. This is a 4-part series, also like an Elseworlds tale. This one's written and drawn by Cliff Chiang, and it features an older Catwoman where there is no longer Batman, and what's going on with that story there. So alternate take, again, DC Black Label, another title. I think there was a period there on the show where we were like, where are all the DC Black Label books? Well, apparently they saved them for the fall of this year. And then later on Friday, it was announced Batman the Audio Adventures podcast is coming to comic books with a cast-written special. This was news by Newsarama, it was posted. They had the scoop on this. There's some interesting writers involved in this one, including Bobby Moynihan, Heidi Gardner, Paul Scheer. These are comedians. If you don't know, Bobby and Heidi, both SNL alums or SNL cast members currently. So likely this is going to be funny. It's an interesting reveal. The cover art is insanely cool too. So I'm getting the impression that it's like, you know, old school radio plays, but with a new twist. So that'll be neat to check out. And then finally, in our last bit of news, the Harvey Awards nominees were announced. So a lot of incredible works in their list here for the 2021 Harvey Awards. My favorite, The Magic Fish, is up for Book of the Year, but there's also Superman's Pal, Jimmy Olsen, of course, so good. Monsters by Barry Windsor Smith from Fantagraphics. That's another one that's on a lot of people's lists for best. The Department of Truth Volume 1 is also on here, as well as a bunch of indie books from Top Shelf and Drawn in Quarterly, like Cyclopedia Exotica, which I believe we have a review of on AIPTComics.com, and The Book Tour by Andy Watson, just another one. They also have a Digital Book of the Year category. Cyclopedia Exotica is also on this. There's a Best Children or Young Adult Book. The Magic Fish, again, on this list. If The Magic Fish doesn't come out with a Harvey Award, I'm going to be really upset. Best Adaptation from Comic Book Graphic Novel. This is where they get a little further away from comics, but The Boys is nominated, Invincible, the cartoon on Amazon, Loki by Disney+, Superman and Lois also on the list, Sweet Tooth, and WandaVision. Good lord, we've had a really good year for comic adaptations, just from that list alone. Best Manga is also on here. Chainsaw Man, I know a lot of people are really into that one. That's nominated. And then finally, Best International Book, The City of Belgium, a great book from Drawn in Quarterly, is on here. Paul at Home, The Winter of the Cartoonist, Factory Summers, and Moms are all on this list. A lot of really good books. What I love about the Harvey Award nominees, well, the Harvey Awards in general, is that there are not a ton of categories. Like the Eisners, gosh, I feel like it takes an hour and a half or 2 hours to get through all the winners when they do have the winners at SCCC. This isn't going to take too long to get through, and it feels more special when there's less people on the list. Moving on to our top books of the week, I'm going to talk about my top two favorite comics this week. My second favorite book of the week is Spider-Woman number 13 by Carla Pacheco and Perry Perez. This book is insanely action-packed. It's basically a long chase sequence, starting with Jessica Drew hitting a bad guy with her baby carriage because they woke her baby up from their nap. And it just spins from there. Essentially, Spider-Woman's trying to get this person, nab this person, and get a little revenge in the process. But along the way, she encounters other villains that are working with this main character, which all leads to an incredible fight on a plane, airplane wing that just lifted off. Carla is really good with dialogue and keeping, you know, Jessica Drew talking the whole time. And it's not just nonsensical chatter. It's funny. It's self-reflective. It's commenting on what's going on in the scene. It's just nonstop fun. And Perry Perez, one of the best, most bombastic superhero comic artists today. I'll talk a little bit about one of the pages in a second, but the layout composition is exceptional. For a guy who's reviewed hundreds of comics over the years, thousands of comics actually, layout design is so key in, you know, separating yourself from the pack and telling a story. A lot of comic artists talk about this where, you know, they can do covers and you know, blow us away with splash pages, but sequential storytelling in a visual way is not easy to do, and Perry Perez is very good at that. And then my favorite comic of the week was Iron Man number 10 by Christopher Cantwell and Cafu. So this issue finally reveals what's going on with Tony Stark. We have gone, I think, two or three issues now without seeing Iron Man in this story arc. Instead, we've got a whole issue on Hellcat and a whole issue on Korvac. Essentially, it seems like Cantwell is slowly humanizing, well, not slowly, but he's humanizing each character on their own terms. You get that here with Iron Man. This is a cool issue in part because it blends, you know, cool background, Iron Man history. I don't want to spoil anything, but there are familiar faces that show up on this weird sci-fi futuristic fantasy planet. And that's the other thing. This blends this fantasy vibe and sci-fi vibe really good. Now, if you've read Iron Man, he has gone back in time to medieval times before. And, you know, he is basically a knight in armor in a way. So those genres kind of blend really well for the character. Cafu's art is insanely good in this book. You really get a feel for the planet, the beauty of the planet, the peacefulness that Iron Man feels on this planet, and how maybe he doesn't want to leave. Maybe he doesn't want to ever leave this planet. And meanwhile, though, of course, his IV, he has a drip of giving him morphine because he broke his neck. And the Iron Man suit is actually holding him together. And so there is a bit of urgency to get off the planet, but maybe not. Maybe once that morphine runs out, he can just deal with it a different way. So the book is just really well written from beginning to end, and that's why it's my favorite book of the week. The visual storytelling is really rich, too. And there's the fight scene, of course. You need that in your superhero comics. And it ends in a way that is tantalizing. This is an Iron Man book that doesn't feel like any Iron Man book I've read in decades. And Cantwell's very good at putting characters on a personal journey that feels emotional and real. And that's why it's my favorite book of the week. Moving on to standout kapow moment of the week. This is our favorite moment of the week in comics. For me, it comes from Spider-Woman number 13. The opening page, you can actually see it in the preview if you haven't seen the preview on amputeecomics.com. Spider-Woman totally decking the bad guy with a baby stroller. What's really standout about it is Perez has drawn Spider-Woman, who's just in her street clothes, hitting this person who's flying back towards us. There's also a couple toys flying up in the air, but the "oh baby" sound effect wraps around them in this really cool spherical kind of way. And it's just so dynamic to have the sound effects like this. In fact, the whole book has great sound effects. And then there's also this like Ben Day-Dot look going on with the borders. Now, one could say, hey, well, there's no background. What's up with that? But it's just the characters and then the "oh baby" are lifting off the page in such a cool way. It's hard to look away from this. It really is just like a work of art. And the detail is so good. I mean, there's even details in the "oh baby" text. You could not put this into a computer and write "oh baby" like this. This is hand drawn and must have taken a lot of time to do. And just again, Perry Perez is one of the best in the biz. In our next segment, top books for next week, I'm going to talk about my most anticipated comic out next week. And it doesn't come from Marvel or DC. No, it comes from IDW. John Layman and Nick Bradshaw are joining forces for a new series called Bermuda Number One. So the cover art alone is really cool. They've got a lot of their super friends, I'd call them, doing covers for this, including Art Adams, of course, but Nick Bradshaw as well has multiple covers. So if you haven't guessed, Bermuda is about the Bermuda Triangle, but it features a 16-year-old scrappy survivor. And this has been the only life she has ever known until today. She's discovered something on her island that will either open a doorway between her world and ours or destroy it. So if you don't know the Bermuda Triangle, traditionally is a story about, you know, planes disappearing. Well, maybe this story shows us what's behind the Bermuda Triangle. We haven't seen a Bermuda Triangle story in any fiction for quite a while, so it feels new and fresh and cool. And Nick Bradshaw is one of the best. He's traditionally done a lot of covers, but, you know, he did Wolverine and the X-Men series with Jason Aaron for quite a bit, gosh, decade ago now. And the interior art is going to look gorgeous, so totally check that out. And then in our Judging by the Cover Junior segment, I picked Moon Knight number one. Now, Moon Knight has so many good covers. Like, you could literally close your eyes and just point at them if they were lined up, and it would be a good cover. But my favorite is Kyle Hotz's cover. So Moon Knight is, if you go to aptcomics.com and go to this podcast post, you could see the cover. But Moon Knight is hunched over on the ledge of a building, as one does, similar to Batman. And only the moon is illuminating him and his cape. His cape, by the way, is flowing into the sky as if it is a cloud itself. He is muscular as hell, but the light is like illuminating his muscles, his bulbous muscles, in a cool way. The way his hands are like gripping, but also clenched, I don't know if it's clenched, but poised in the air, is like very like almost animalistic, which is cool. His cloak, though, around his face is neat. There's a lot going on with the mood and atmosphere that I really like about this cover, which is why it's my favorite. And then, since we have to have two, Nathan picks Superman and the Authority number one. This is by Mikhail Janin. This cover has Superman in front of some computer screens, clicking away. But why would he do that? Why wasn't he flying around fighting? Well, I guess we'll find out in the issue. But behind him, we see a few of the Authority members on screens as well. It's really cool, this balance between the background, the foreground, and Superman in the middle. It draws your eye to Superman. His symbol is basically, on his chest, is basically at the center of the cover. He looks very serious. It's a different vibe from Superman. He also has gray in his hair. Since it's so different for a Superman cover, or a cover featuring Superman, it's striking. And this book is, of course, written by Grant Morrison. And then, in our next segment, Steve Orlando joins me to talk about Starward from Heavy Metal Magazine. We also get into a bunch of his other titles, his writing process, and more. This is Steve's third time on the show, and we had a blast. Enjoy. So on with me is Steve Orlando. Steve, you are like the busiest guy in comics right now, maybe next to like Jeff Lemire. Thank you so much for being on the APT Comics podcast. This is your third time on the show.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So, okay, well, you've got Aftershock work, you've got Marvel work, you've got Image Comics work, now you've got Heavy Metal work with Starward. The third chapter comes out in Heavy Metal Magazine next week. How do you keep up?
Yeah, I mean, don't forget IDW work, too.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
King Grimlock launching next month.
I can't wait for that.
How do I keep up? Well, the nice thing is that, and it's not the sexiest answer, but the nice thing is that, like, a lot of these things have a really long runway. So I'm privileged in that, you know, a lot of people want to work with me, certainly, yeah. And I'm very thankful for Heavy Metal. And, you know, by the way, like, as a kid who stayed up until 2 or 3 a.m. watching that movie when I wasn't supposed to be in the early 90s, like, it is still wild for me to be serialized in that magazine.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have been working on Starward for a long time, almost a year. So we're way ahead. It's all going to be very on time. And so it seems like, oh, how does Orlando sleep? But really, Orlando planned very far ahead. And that's the secret. That's your like, save for your taxes, dad advice. But it's true. And you too can have 1,000 books out if you just have a calendar.
Was the pandemic part of that? Like the delays and whatnot, and then also probably extra planning and plotting and stuff?
It was, but I was lucky as well. You know, I had just gone freelance from DC in like January of 2020. And then we got hit real bad like 2 months later. I was lucky because I had already I was already hustling, you know, like I already knew that I couldn't depend, not to say that I wouldn't get more things from DC, but I knew that I couldn't count on it because I was no longer on contract. So I was like, shit, I need to get my shit in gear. And so for me, the wheels were already in motion, pitching a ton of originals, reaching out to Marvel. I mean, we had already been in talks, but, you know, things finally came together after that Hollywood Reporter article.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was lucky, you know, that I had already hit the ground running. And so the only difference is that I kept running, and that's why you see a ton of new originals out from me and now a ton of stuff coming up for Marvel that isn't announced yet. So it's all coming together. Darkhold's finally coming out. And that's just the tip of the iceberg actually there. And this is the tip of the iceberg for heavy metal as well. You'll see at least one other super exciting project from me and hopefully two, if all comes together. So,
nice.
Yeah, there's a lot of plates in the air, but you know, I know when to tap each one. And that's how we
spinning.
Keep going. Yeah, no, I got a little alarm clock and it just makes it all work.
Nice. How does it feel to be writing heavy metal's first YA series?
Confusing. No, because you know, we had to decide what that meant for heavy metal, because obviously you can't do like Tarna as a teenager who like, you know, for decency reasons, you know, and so the challenge, and it was an exciting challenge, and I'm proud of what we did, is how can we do a story that is, you know, talking about folks between the ages of like 17 and 21 and keep the subversiveness, keep the provocative nature that I think is heavy metal, but you know, do that in a way that still fits into the YA realm. So, you know, like people have read my work, like I'm not talking out of school, like in another world, if this wasn't for that demographic and they were older people, you'd have dicks and people getting cut in half and all these things that you, has become this, the trademark of an Orlando book.
Right.
But the challenge was to be that provocative and be that real, but in a way that, you know, fits into what you would want to show and do with people of this age, you know, like totally. And it's been fun. You know, we are a book that anyone can, you know, anyone can read. We're not, again, like, it's not like we're not giving you like Den, where he's like young Den just sleeping with all the women at age 14.
No, I think you did a really good job of blending that. It's not like for little kids, of course. But it's not.
No, but and it acknowledges that at those ages, you are a young adult. You know, like, I mean, Stephanie Cohen is just a reflection of my life at her age. I mean, I wish I was kicking some dude that I just used for sex out of my bed at 20 at my parents' house. I was more like, you know, rolling out of bed after being at Denny's until 2 a.m. and not having sex at age 20. But regardless, you know, you write the fiction that you wish was your reality. So. But, you know, her life as a lifeguard, I did that soul-sucking job for 8 years.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
And and I've skimmed vomit and shit out of the kid pool. So, like...
So it was a pool lifeguard? It wasn't, like, an ocean or beach or bay lifeguard?
Oh, David, we got no oceans in central New York, my friend.
Oh, okay.
It was... yeah, I taught swim lessons, and then the gig is you teach swim lessons in the morning, and then you have lunch, and you go and work at the pool...
Right.
After, and we had like a foot tall kiddie pool that was always warm, and you always wondered if it was the sun or just all of the piss. and so, you know, like these are things, these are things that can be in the book. And so it like, you think I'm just rambling, but I'm actually showing you where we landed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like people that talk like real people that do the things folks do in that age group and have those desires and aren't just like, you know, aren't sort of sugar-coated, but well within the bounds of decency for characters that are still young adults.
Did you also not like science when you were growing up? Because I think your main character says something like, ugh, science.
I actually did drop science and math senior year of high school so I could take extra English courses because I knew I wanted to go into something in the English field.
Yeah.
I actually do like science. You know, I make up the parts that I don't like. Welcome to my job. But the key for me there is just the parents projecting a narrative onto their kids, which does happen to me all the time. And in big and small ways, you know, like I'll get like, and no disrespect intended to this person, but like I'll get like an Alex Ross art book Mm-hmm. And Alex is an incredible artist, but he hasn't been my favorite artist since I was 12 years old.
Right.
And I'm 35 now. And they'll be like, oh, you still love Alex Ross. And I'm like,
oh, okay.
You made that up. Like, you created that I liked it. And then you like you create a fancy that I have, and then you give me gifts based on it and shit like that.
Right. Right.
So it's based a lot on that. And also on my friends, a friend from college who I'm not going to name because God knows she might see herself here, but
sure.
She had like the ultimate white trash helicopter parents. I distinctly remember that she wanted to do art, and it's pissed me off for 20 years. Like, her parents are very just wealthy bullshitters, and they decided that she was gaining too much weight in college and couldn't handle the rigors of school.
Oh no.
So they signed her up for Curves, and they would call every day to make sure she was going.
Oh my God.
And eventually, she wasn't going because she had other priorities, and they pulled her out of school.
Jesus. Because
they pulled her out of school because she was getting too fat. And I've been venomously angry at those pieces of shit for 20 years. And that's an aspect of what's going on with Stephanie's parents too. Not that Stephanie, they set their priorities for her. They set her interests for her. And then when those don't line up with reality, they just sort of ignore that. And that's what's going on there. And that's a little bit from my parents and also from other parents.
Right. And that's like the human element that makes Star Wars so good. Meanwhile, you've also got dark sci-fi and fantasy melding in with this magical girl story. Where did the inspiration come from marrying these elements like dark sci-fi and fantasy?
I mean, coming off Wonder Woman, at the same time I was watching Sailor Moon Crystal, for one thing, and running to the theme song at the gym. That's where this, although I don't, that's where a lot of this came from. But also just, I like flipping tropes on their head. I like analyzing them in a different way. And so there are echoes of other types of lore in Star Wars, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope that the perspective is different. That's what I try to offer, a different point of view. And the biggest point of view that I'm sort of proud of in this book, if this is a slight spoiler, the downside of writing these issues so long ago is that I don't exactly remember where issue 3 ends because I wrote it last year. But
I'm looking at it right now. Let me see.
Well, these are people who are, it's not a big spoiler, but obviously Chaos is this big villain in Star Wars. And I always think it's quaint when you do these stories. And again, no disrespect, I fucking love Final Crisis and things like that.
Yeah.
I really love Final Crisis and all its imperfect glory. Mm-hmm. However, I always think it's cute that people are like, oh, Darkseid is the god of evil. If we kill him, everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. That's sort of nonsense, Right. And it's a good kind of nonsense. That's what comics are here for. But I want to take a different look. So in this book, you have people who are fighting just to give us a fighting chance. And I'm very proud of that point. There has been someone working against us being good and working against us unifying as a culture. And there has been someone basically doing psychic ballast on us for 2000 years. And that's Chaos.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea isn't that if he gets slayed and they win, suddenly we'll all be hugging like at the end of Wonder Woman, World War I is solved. No, suddenly we'll have a chance to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly it'll be an even playing field. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I'm very proud of that point in this book because that's very prescient to today. I'm not going to come here and say that if one bad actor in society just choked on a fucking pretzel or something, everything would be solved. No. But what the Star Wars sisters are fighting for is to give us a fighting chance. And I really like that message because it still puts the agency on us to do the work.
Right.
And that's reality to me.
Ivan Chavrin's art is incredible. The colors are amazing too. Is there anything they've done that just blew your mind?
Everything, man. Yvonne is, first of all, there's such amazing art coming out of the Russian comic scene, or I should say the Slavic comic scene. Poland, Ukraine, all those places, Czech.
Mm-hmm.
Yvonne's art is amazing, and it's totally unlike. I broke with an artist from Siberia, Artyom Trakhanov, who's incredible too. I'm working with a different Artyom, Topilin, on Razor Blades. And what's fascinating to me about all these people is the influences are so different.
Yeah.
The storytelling is so different. And with Yvonne, I didn't know what to expect, to be honest. Like, I didn't know how he was going to take the story and envision these characters, but it's so unique. And just as the story goes on, he gets more and more comfortable. Like, if you think issue 3 is great, you should see the splashes in issue 6 and shit like that.
3 is really nice. Really pretty.
I've been so, so happy with his work. And it's been a surprise for me because I was not familiar with Yvonne before this book.
Yeah.
And to Medney's credit, he said, you know, I know this guy. He's going to be great. And he beyond over-delivered on this book. And it just keeps getting better. Like, and for me, like anyone who knows me at any time I've been on a podcast, like I'm not in charge, you know, so we're a team and I've given him a lot of room to tell the story like he wants, mm-hmm. to design these characters like he wants. And I never like it just continues to surprise and wow me. So nice. He's been amazing. I hope we can continue to work together because he is really killing this book.
Really is. It's quite something. What is it like writing these smaller chunks? Or do you write in the conventional comic book 20-page sense and then they split it up for the magazine? Or do you write in the smaller chunks for the magazine? Because it's different.
No, I mean, I write for 10 pages because we want to, yeah. You know, you still need a good cliffhanger. It can't just be like, oh, the TV went off and then like right. do something.
Tony Patrick was telling me Brian Bendis said every page should have a cliffhanger or something like that. I don't know if that's true.
I've heard versions of that.
Yeah.
Like Tom Pyre once advised me to end at least every page turn on a question.
Uh-huh.
Which is a version of that, you know, like is a soft cliffhanger.
Sure.
Because, you know, subliminally it makes people want to turn the page. So, yeah, I mean, I write for 10, but it's not that hard, honestly. Like, I mean, look, half the stuff that you do when you're breaking in is 8-page stories. So it's been a fun challenge, but it's also kind of exciting because the cliffhanger is like the iconic moment of almost all serialized storytelling. And now I get twice as many.
True.
So I'm not sad about it. And we are doing an oversized finale. So chapter 11 is 16 pages again.
Nice.
Lots blows up. It's me, so of course a lot blows up, and I'm super, super proud of it.
It is really cool how Heavy Metal, you know, you have the 10-page chunk in the magazine, then you're going to have it, you know, reprinted and then collected. Your book kind of your story lives on in so many different formats, and in a way, the, you know, relationship your reader has to the content is different too.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I love different delivery systems. When it comes to rolling out story, I'll take a job just because it's different. I mean, I've never done something serialized in a magazine before, and now I have, and it's been a pleasure. I was always going to work with them anyway because I love the people in editorial there, but like TKO, for example, the minute Z sat me down and said, oh, we're going to do simultaneous release, digital, OGN, but also bingeable singles in this nice slipcase. I was like, okay, never done that. Fascinated by it. So so I love the Heavy Metal plan, offering the serialized version and then offering the collected direct market version. And then of course, eventually the trade paperback.
Right.
People should be able to receive content in the way that is most exciting to them. So anytime someone is offering it a lot of different ways, I'm there and I'm there to support it.
So when you were a lifeguard, were you reading Heavy Metal by the pool?
And like 15 people died, David. You can't read it.
When did you pick up your first Heavy Metal magazine?
I was in and out. I think like a lot of people. I was like a back issue guy in the 90s when I shouldn't have been reading it. In high school and college, I sort of dropped off. And then I came back for a minute when GMO was doing Savage Sword of Jesus Christ a couple years ago. And they did an amazing job there. So I've been in and out. But I mean, I return to the movie every couple of years as well. Like the aesthetic is, we don't talk about the 2000 version, but the aesthetic is something that I've always loved. I mean, I like shocking people. I like provoking a reaction and I like being subversive. And that's what Heavy Metal has always been about. And on a basic level, their logo is fucking lit. So I keep telling them they got to be selling that and everything.
That's an important part of the job, the logo.
People would buy that Heavy Metal logo on things without even knowing it was a magazine.
That's true. That's a good point. What's it like having Tim Seeley as your boss?
Tim is great. And Joe Illidge, they're editing together. They're both great. I've known Tim a little longer, but I've known Joe a long time too. We met in 2016, and they've got different styles, but they are good at keeping me honest and getting you guys the best product you can. I mean, Tim is like my ride or die. He has helped me when I needed help in real life things numerous times. And we also just like are very similar people connecting on like movie obscuria, comics obscuria, and you may actually see a more direct Sealy in Orlando collaboration next year if all goes to plan.
You're like a master of collaborations. You've got Rainbow Bridge coming out with Steve Fox, Philip Kennedy Johnson, Rainbow, Killaman.
Kennedy Johnson and me, Killaman. Yep. Rainbow Bridge and Party and Pray with Steve Fox.
Yep.
Search for Who, a Chinese Jewish action thriller that is by me and John Sway starting in September.
Ooh, I didn't know about that one.
Amazing art by Rubin Cubillas, by the way. Like, so fucking good. That dude is gonna, like, he's gonna do this book and then be like, bye fuckers, I'm going to DC and Marvel. So, like, it's amazing. And more to come. I'm actually doing a book with my friend Jarrett Melendez, which is gonna be like a science fantasy romance, Romeo and Romeo type romance. That's gonna be out probably next year. I can't say what publisher that's with before or yet. And hopefully more to come. You know, the thing is, I like writing by myself, of course, but everybody has their blind spots and everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. So I also I genuinely enjoy co-writing when it's with people who I love and respect and don't want to murder. But like, we make each other better. You know, me and Fox is different than me on that book alone or Fox in that book alone. Me and John is the same thing. And definitely me and Philip. I mean, Kill a Man is unquestionably my favorite thing I've ever done. And I know, like, I mean, the ending of that book specifically, I wish I could bottle the experience because Philip had his ending. I had mine. They were not the same. And we both explained why ours were thematically important and found something that satisfied both of those things that was infinitely better than what either of us would have done alone on our solo perspective. And so you guys got an ending that, like, I was like crying writing. Philip doesn't cry. His tear ducts were removed in the army. But I was crying. And, you know, you guys benefited. You got a book that, and an ending that was exponentially better than he or I would have done by myself. And that is the case with Rainbow Bridge. It's the case with all these things. So, I mean, I'm going to keep doing shit by myself, of course. Sure. But I'm going to keep pursuing these things as well because folks deserve diverse content. They deserve different styles of writing. And you're always getting something fresh when I'm working with someone new. Plus, it allows me to introduce creators to new publishers and new audiences that maybe they wouldn't connect with before, you know, through my own, you know, through my own, I don't have a brand. Brand is a douchebag phrase, but like, you know, my own following.
Sure, sure. Yeah. You're building up a following and sharing that is helping others. Similar to Danhausen and you kind of collaborating semi-recently. That was funny.
And again, no, Danhausen and I have a short story out in October from Heavy Metal. You'll see what that's in very soon. I've been shaving years off my life on this big project that's going to be out for Halloween with Heavy Metal.
Nice.
And I wish I could talk about it more if only Kat were here to give me a thumbs up or not. However, it's going to be big. It's with some very iconic friends, Danhausen included, and it's going to be out for Halloween.
Exciting.
And I will definitely tell you what it is when we're not on the podcast. But
okay.
Look, Danhausen is great. He became a friend in the pandemic, and he's just like, he's one of the hardest working people in wrestling, and he knows that it's not just about what you do in the ring. It's about the character. And he's crushing it. You know, I don't know what to say. Like, I'm glad that he'll show up. I mean, I'm glad he'll show up and do Commanders of Crisis covers with me or do this writing. I mean, that motherfucker's been on Conan. He was on
Talk I know, that was crazy.
Like, his character is bigger than wrestling.
I want to see you on Conan. I wonder what that would be like.
You know, the funny thing is his assistant, Sona, is another very close friend of my very close friend, Steve Siegel, who got me into comics.
Oh, really?
So Sona and I have been on a hike in Altadena, actually. This is before she started being like in front of the camera. But yeah, we both got brought up in the biz, obviously different sides.
Sure.
By Stephen T. Siegel. And it's all It's all coming full circle.
It just shows you, yeah, like the connections you make along the way and collaborating is only, you know, enriching your career in so many ways. Back to Steward really quick. I had one more question about it. So again, the third chapter comes out next week in Heavy Metal Magazine 308. But without spoiling anything, can you talk a little bit about what to expect from the other Starward sisters that we haven't officially met yet?
Different color costume. the real answer is a different perspective. Okay. You know, I try to keep them. I mean, they all have their own backstory that we're going to explore as much as we can in a relatively short story. I mean, it's relatively short because every two chapters is one issue. And we got to blow shit up, you know,
sure.
But you're going to find that they all come from different backgrounds. They all engage this flood of ancient prehistory, pre-Cambrian memories in their own way. And, you know, some of them are more on board than others. I think Gold is my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Gold is she's not the Wolverine of the group. She's like she's the loner. She's the Amos for people who watch The Expanse of the group, you know.
Nice.
And she's got a big fucking sword and it's a gold outfit. So, but
is gold your favorite color? Is gold a color? It is, right?
Is gold a color? I think that's a question for Yvonne. Is gold my favorite color? Black is my favorite color. Please, I'm a freelance writer. I love her, and she's from like the leaf peeping wastelands of New England, so that's a love letter nice. To where you and I live,
right?
You know,
good connection.
She's great. I love Starward Red as well. She has a very cool gun that is based on a carbine, like an old musket. That actually, that was a Tim Seeley suggestion.
It's oh,
a
neat.
Starbine. It's a starbine because I can't skip on a pun. I'm like physically incapable of it. But I like that too. That plays into how they find the other sisters. And of course, they're going to have to find a way to get out of reality and confront chaos all before chapter 11.
Nice.
Of the series, not bankruptcy.
Now, so we talked a little bit about Rainbow Bridge. Were you writing that at the same time as Starward? Were you in that YA headspace at the same time?
Yeah. I don't even remember. I think I finished Rainbow Bridge. I mean, Starward, I finished Starward 3 months ago. Okay. But it was, you know, it's been in progress for like a year and a half. Rainbow Bridge, I think we finished up in September. So yeah, I was definitely working both at the same time. I mean, you can see, I'm working ahead, but it's a good place to be.
It just occurred to me, you're technically launching Aftershocks YA and Heavy Metals at the same time. Why? You are
not
the
technically. Not technically, I am.
Yeah, you are the Y. Well, you're basically writing the Jack and Annie for kindergarten, but for comic publishers.
Which is funny because look at me.
No, look, you're very sweet looking, and you're young. You have that youthfulness that, you know, children desire. No, that's so wrong.
Children desire. Wow, you're also probably at least 10 years younger than me, but. No, I mean, it's funny because, yeah, if you read Midnighter, you would never be like, this is the YA guy. But I think that it's worked out.
Well, that's
like,
what's so cool about it, in my opinion. You know, you're not in just a single box. You can stretch your legs and do all sorts of things that your fans won't expect necessarily.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying, you know. And further, and I should say as well, like, Aftershock, I think if Fox were on this call, he would say is technically middle grade, which is slightly younger.
Right.
You know, and that's what I have him for. I mean, he's an editor on Razor Blades. He's also a comic writer, but not the real asset. Another great asset is that he was a YA editor at Random House for years.
Oh, so I didn't realize that. Yeah.
To launch that especially, I wanted to bring him in because, I mean, he knows the strike zone. Obviously, mm-hmm. we're kind of like making it up as we go along in terms of content for what a heavy metal young adult book is because sure. you have to find the Venn diagram. But the Venn diagram is a circle for Rainbow Bridge. Like, we are right in middle grade strike zone. And that is because of Steve telling me that I can't have intestines in this book.
Nice. So we keep talking about how busy you are and you said at the top of the interview that, you know, you're really good at planning. How quickly, though, I'm curious, how quickly do you write a script? How fast can you typically pull out? You know, a triple A.
Do you mean ideally, or I mean, I wrote, I have under duress and mandate written a 48 page annual in 2 days, but is not ideal. And I will never tell you what book that was.
I could probably guess the publisher, but.
But ideally it's a 5 day process. That's the ideal. Like, and that's why I schedule out in advance. If I can, like, ideally I take 2 days, and I write different than other people. Probably I take 2 days doing all of the paneling and plotting and blocking of the action. I take 2 days doing all the dialogue, and then I revise all that on Friday and send that motherfucker in.
Nice. Ideally. That's interesting. Yeah. Like, when you're juggling so many titles too, do you try to focus on one specifically until you're done, or do you, can you drop one and pick up another one?
No, in theory, I have like a week dedicated to an issue.
Okay.
But yeah, there's no way I could just only work on one thing right through. That's a level of scheduling that almost no modern direct market publisher will allow.
Right.
But I can do my best to make sure, okay, this is a Star Wars week.
Sure.
This is a Search for Who week, you know, mm-hmm. or like, this is a, well, it was a Darkhold week. Mm-hmm. I wish I could tell you the other Marvel things that are coming next week.
I can't wait.
You know, follow Anthony, and he's in 2 days before. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway. Yeah, but no, it's like, it does blow me up. You know, if it's a Star Wars week and suddenly I have got a rush on something else that came out of nowhere, but ideally sure. that doesn't happen. You know, like, I'm a grown up and I try to make things happen the best way possible. And most of the time it works out.
I'm going to ask you an edgy question now. All right, you've got so many titles going on right now. You've got, you know, Project Patron, Commanders in Crisis, Steward, Darkhold coming up. They are basically your babies. If you had to kill one of the babies, no longer exists in reality, but one of the other ones becomes a movie franchise, which would die and which would become the franchise?
I would kill Commanders in Crisis.
Okay.
Because even though, I mean, I shouldn't say even though, it is 100% my baby.
Yeah.
But because the counterpoint you gave me is becomes a movie franchise, Commanders in Crisis is never written to be adapted. It is written to be the most comic book ever. It is sure. like my love letter to Gardner Fox, super compression, mm-hmm. weird ideas that I got from growing up on both Silver Age comics and Milligan and Morrison. So if I had to kill something so that something else could be adapted, I would definitely just nuke that motherfucker because it was not made to be adapted. Like, God love anyone that tries. And, oh, it'd be Kill. I mean, I want Kill a Man to be a movie. Like, nice. I mean, I want that. And not because I am doing, like, the Millar gig of doing movie pitches as comics, but because I want that story to be accessible to a wider audience. And the fact is, more people watch movies than read graphic novels. And that's an incredibly personal story to me. Nice. And I want the biggest fucking megaphone possible on that thing.
I think AIPT gave it a 10 out of 10. It was, I mean, we talked about it too, I think in December. It's such a great book. People should pick it up. It's Killaman's from Aftershock.
I mean, if they didn't give it a 10 out of 10, they can go back and do it now.
That's an interesting question. We do a lot of reviews at AIPTcomics.com, and like, sometimes we'll give something a 9.5 and we'll get like shit from it from a creator. And it's like, well, come on, I just, you know, we can't, not everything is perfect. Do you take...
Oh, I mean, you'll never get shit from me about that. I hate review inflation. I think there's too many 10 out of 10s. It's almost meaningless now.
That's the thing that we're kind of trying to keep tamped down. Because some reviewers just love everything. I mean, that's just
a personality. Well, the issue with that is that, like, it would have to be an industry... It would have to be, an industry-wide decision.
Sure.
Because the fact is, like, yeah, I would rather that there was, like, only a couple things got a 10... a year. I mean, a couple issues right. of a comic, but that's not reality across the board. No. So then if you've got a couple of folks that are actually being honest, suddenly your aggregate score gets nuked, you know?
Right, right.
And it's weird to gauge. It's weird to gauge. But the fact is, as me at least, I mean, mm-hmm. I can only talk about myself.
Yeah.
I would rather there were less perfect scores because it should be really special.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like, unless you're going to do like a Dave Meltzer and invent like an 11 out of 10 when something is really good, which you should do for me on Kill 'Em.
Of course. Yes, but, definitely.
But you know what I mean? Like, I have no problem with honest reviews. I think, you know, like when you think about what a 10 out of 10 means, I mean, like, that should be some of the best comics work ever done.
Ever. Yeah, that's really, how we're kind of considering it AIPT, yeah.
And is that really happening multiple times a week?
No.
No, I mean, like, it's not.
I review maybe 400 books a year, and I maybe give out two or three a year. I think that's a pretty good ratio, but I don't know.
I mean, I've got no problem. My only issue, like, I will never be someone who's going to go, like, get hot about reviews online. My only personal issue is when you're in the uncanny valley of not being so negative that it's funny, but also... but also not saying anything constructive. And I right. still keep that to myself. But like, the only thing I don't like is like, oh, Orlando sucks. Make it like so crude yeah. that I'm entertained by it. Like celebrity mean tweets.
Oh, sure. Like a roast.
Yeah. Like there was a site that decided that my dialogue was so bad that I must not speak English as a first language. What? And they started posting pictures of mariachis and being like, oh, I found Orlando.
Oh my God. Wait, and that's racist.
So comically racist and so negative that I was just like, okay, you clowns, like whatever.
Yeah. Jesus.
But that's into celebrity meme tweets. And I'm not a celebrity, but that's into creator meme tweets.
You're not a celebrity yet.
I'm like, okay. But when it's just like, a paragraph version of like meh, I'm like, okay, I can't work with that. At least tell me what I could do better.
Right. Or tell you better so that you can understand whether or not they're wrong or not. Right. I mean, or they didn't understand the work.
I either want it to be so ludicrously negative that I'm entertained by it because sure. that's how I am. Like, oh, Steve Orlando must douche with Michael Bay scripts or something, you know? Like,
wow. That's actually pretty good. Did you just make that up?
Yes.
Oh, I like that.
Have that for 10 cents. No, you can have it for
I'm going to put that in my Extreme Carnage Phage review next week.
You know what? It's yours. Put that in. Because for the Venom crowd, like that it is a blockbuster, like gonzo book. So that's the perfect positive. I love being able to go all out with the symbiote stuff and know that like it's a gonzo blockbuster. You know, like...
That's where I feel like...
Even wilder. Make it even wilder in the toxin.
A lot of reviewers don't get that. Like, what is the book trying to do? Now look at it in that point of view. If you review it and go, oh, Lois Lane should never be able to say this. Like, you're just not understanding how comics and serial storytelling works.
I mean, in the same way that people watch wrestling and you always hear JR say, well, it's not ballet. Like, you know, if you're reading a book called Extreme Carnage, like, you're not getting Fun Home, my friends. Like, you're
right.
You're getting a snot alien that takes over someone else's body and likes to eat spinal fluid.
Snot alien. Yeah. I love it. Who is your favorite symbiote?
As a kid, it was Scream.
Yeah.
I'm kind of obligated to say Toxin now.
Sure.
But it's also kind of not a lie because I like the different interaction he has with all of his hosts. Obviously, I made a new one. But I like that he's the only one that uses the singular pronoun. Like, they are very much a team.
Mm-hmm. Now, Toxin's the one you did in Planet of the Symbiotes, right?
Correct.
And I loved your take. I love the idea of this young child. Well, I'll spoil it. I love the idea of who the person is underneath the symbiote. It's such a clever idea. Like, that could literally be an entire movie.
I mean, it's Symbiote Prime or Symbiote Shazam. And
oh, I didn't even think of that. That's funny.
But no, like I do like that their interaction is different. Yeah, they are very much a team, and you'll see that in the issue of Extreme Carnage too. Like Toxin doesn't. All the other hosts go into the void. Toxin doesn't let his host into the void because he wants to protect him. Like he has a separate life, even though he's obviously a bad passenger. Like I say in the Planet of the Symbiotes one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like that because he's basically like if I was me trolling my 12-year-old or 14-year-old self. That's right. Toxin's voice. He's like, he's, you know, like many characters I write, he's kind, but he's not nice. Mm-hmm. And that is something that my own good friends say about me. So I'm just putting it in.
I liked with the phage issue next week. I liked how it's kind of animalistic. He's this hulking giant dude. And what's underneath is quite evil, I suppose. Or is it?
The big push with all of these Life Foundation symbiotes, not just with phage.
Yeah.
But. In the room in general between Philip and Alyssa and Clay was that we wanted to, like, when you meet them, we want them each to be as distinct as the work that Clay did with Scream. You know, like Scream and Andy are an amazing team. Clay did great, great work with that character and others have too, just Clay is the most recent. And so we sat down and really came up with different dynamics for all these characters. For Phage, as you saw, it's a very simple one. Phage is, you know, related to a Latin word that means eating.
Yeah.
and we made him very focused on simplicity after how wild the Life Foundation symbiotes have been in the past. Sure. And you'll see how that plays out in the issue. I'm dancing around the topic.
Nice.
But that goes as well. Like each new Life Foundation symbiote, their new hosts, there's no cookie cutter hosts. They're each in it for a different reason. The relationship is different for each of them. You know, it's going to be a, in some cases, you know, they're not even all going to react to Carnage's call in the same way. Sometimes the symbiote will want to go. Sometimes the host will want to go more. The symbiote won't want to go.
Yeah.
We're very focused on like, you should have reasons, even if we're only getting like a one issue vignette with these characters before they go into the deli slicer, because it's a Carnage thing. That shit only matters if you care. Right. So we really spend a lot of time working on the host and working on the personalities of these symbiotes. So that you're reading a Phage book, you know you're reading a Lasher book, or so on and so forth.
And once again, you're collaborating with Phil Kenny Johnson, who's sort of running the show on this.
Yes, Philip is the lead now. He's the captain of this ship. And I'm listen again. I would work with Philip anytime. One of my best friends in life and in comics. So
he was on the show a few months ago, and I was marveling with him. Like he was writing Superman and Alien at the same exact time. Like talk about some of the biggest properties known to man.
Yeah, I mean, I like doing podcasts with Philip because no matter what I say, he barely ever emotes.
I brought up NFTs to him and he was like, what the fuck is an NFT? I had no idea.
I mean, fuck that nonsense. Yeah. But no, I just like, I hate like, me and Philip doing a fucking interview is like, it's like you're interviewing comics, Tim Taylor and Al Borland. Like I will run my mouth and no matter what I say, he'll just be like, Mo, I'm not sure about that, Steve. Like it's just like,
that's funny.
I can't wait to see him again in person and be doing panels where I'm like just relating and doing a fucking like curtsy on the stage. And Philip is just like giving a Orange Cassidy thumbs up at best.
Are you doing New York Comic Con?
No. I'm not ready for cons that big yet.
Yeah, me either.
There's a chance.
Covering it, I mean.
I'm not going to be at the show. There's a chance that if Marvel, I'm going to be in town because, you know, you gotta be to do business.
Yeah.
So there's a chance that if some of the shit I'm doing is going to be announced, I'll be on like Marvel panels, maybe signing it if they have a booth presence, but I won't have a table or anything this year. That's a little bit advanced for me. Especially because who knows what it's going to look
like. Yeah. With the variant and shit. Who knows?
I mean, Boston, I don't know if you watch, if you compulsively watch the Weather Channel numbers like I do, life is basically normal here. We've had zero new cases for like 3 weeks in a row, four weeks in a row, or like at minimal new cases, like 0.01% increase in new cases. So I'm kind of hesitant to be the guy that like goes to fucking New York and ruins that.
Sure.
But I will be around like, and I'll be doing Rose City Comic Con as well. It's kind of my only show so far this year in Portland, Oregon.
Cool.
And I'll, you know, but I'm keeping it cautious still. Cause I think that there's reason to relax to an extent.
Yeah.
But you can't go too far. We're very lucky here in the Boston area to essentially have life as we knew it back.
Yeah.
And my personal responsibility is that I don't want to be the one to fuck that up. So
sure.
That's right.
No, that's responsible of you. Was there any?
I'm surprisingly old. Like I wear these deep V's, but I'm almost 40. So
are there any titles we haven't talked about that you'd like to hype or pitch or anything?
Well, as I said, King Grimlock comes out next month. My first time working for IDW. It's my first time working for Transformers.
It's an exciting time for IDW. They've got a lot going on right now. New editors.
They do. And I hope to be able to work with Mark Doyle again, because he actually was part of my first ever short story I did at Vertigo way back in 2012.
Oh, cool. Didn't realize that.
And is the guy that hooked me up for Midnighter. So if you like me in comics, it's because of Mark Doyle. and if you don't like me, it's also because of Mark.
Works both ways.
But they've been amazing. Hasbro's been amazing. And it's a book. Look, I loved G1 Transformers as a kid. My favorites were very vanilla. Like, you know, in comics, I'm always like, oh, I love Puff Adder or something, you know, but like I was Optimus Prime and Grimlock, my friend. Like it was the most like, it was like being a Hogan fan.
Okay? When you're writing Grimlock, do you do the voice?
I don't know. I don't want Mike to break up with me. But it is a surprisingly easy book to write because he talks like the Hulk.
Sure. Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
But, and I actually really like characters that talk like that, because then you can bring around like an idiom and it becomes fun.
Right.
I mean, I did like in Curse of the Man Thing, we did that transition where She-Hulk shows up and she at the time was talking like the Hulk, but mm-hmm. still maintains her intelligence.
Right.
So it was like, oh, nice neighborhood for Hulk to smash. And we transitioned into the smash sound effect, which she had with her fucking aluminum base or a titanium baseball bat. She-Hulk with the baseball bat. My favorite thing from that whole event.
I loved it. It did feel like a summer event, even though it was so you know, shortened compared to like a real like big event. I think you did a really good job with that.
Thank you. But to that end, that's what we're going for with Grimlock as well. It is just a giant fantasy blockbuster starring the resident king of the Dinobots. It's
nice.
One of those, like, I can't believe they haven't really done it. You know, you got a guy who turns into a T-Rex and calls himself a king. So maybe we should drop him into this fantasy setting that appeared in one episode of Transformers and blow that shit up. So yeah, again, like we're not making Shade the Changing Man here. We're making a T-Rex dinosaur fights dragons and wizards, and it's going to be huge and super, super fun and exciting. And by the way, like it's still about something, but it's also about him being a T-Rex and fighting woolly mammoths and shit like that.
Yeah, that's what we want.
Yeah, I mean, look, that fucking, like, Cary Norwood's cover at issue one, I, like, punched a hole in my desk. I was so aroused by it. It's so good. And Augustina is crushing interiors as well.
Nice. Well, in our last segment, Off Topic Top Shelf, I just want to ask you, what are you into right now that's not comics related?
I just finished Legendary, which I think is an amazing show on HBO Max. It's based around ballroom culture. Which I'll happily admit was a part of queer culture I knew nothing about. And so watching both seasons has been fascinating to me. If folks have watched Pose, it's about the same type of things, but this is a competition show where different mm-hmm. houses. And it's just been fascinating to me. It's been fascinating to me to learn the elements of Vogue, to learn how vital ballroom culture is for, you know, unhomed queer folks, especially queer folks of color. And it's been a learning experience of the best kind. And it's also super entertaining because the performances are amazing. So I've been loving that.
Nice.
You know, I'm not going to not say I'm not excited that Sting is back and doing amazing work at age 62 in AEW. It's wild. I hope he doesn't die. I hope he goes out on his terms.
I thought he retired for good.
Well, yeah, his neck is fucked up. So, like, I like him on the edge of my seat. But then again, and I was pissed when he came back, even though he's my favorite wrestler in history.
Yeah.
But then again, like, who the fuck am I and who are any of us to tell him that he can't do what he wants?
That's true. If that's what he loves.
If he wants to go out on his terms, I am there to support him. I am amazed at the performance he put on a Double or Nothing. At his age, and I will always show up for him. I'm worried, as I said, but I'll always be there. So yeah, I mean, I'm deep in there. And what else is going on?
Would you ever get in the ring if in 10 years when you're super famous and have your own talk show?
Absolutely not. I'm a coward, man. Like, I would never bump. I'm thinking about putting on a charity show for my 40th birthday in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And so I might, I mean, I would maybe work with folks to do some booking for charity, but I'm not taking a bump. I'm a huge coward. Like when Philip and I did the photo shoot to tease Kill a Man.
Yeah.
Which I was like dressed like a slutty boxer. my friend Tajwar, who shot it for one of the sequences, was like, why don't you guys just like play fight a little bit? And even like play fighting with Philip, who practices MMA.
Yeah.
Like I like teleported onto my ass.
He's built too. He works out all the time.
Yes. One of the few.
Well, you do too, though. You work out all the time as well.
Yes, but I can't crush him and consume his power because he's like fucking tough. He's like 5'3", but could like pick me up like when Eric Larson's Spider-Man picks up cars in the 90s.
Right, right. He's like fucking Puck. There's so many quotes from this episode alone I could use to hype this show.
He's actually almost my height. I shouldn't have said that. The point remains, Puck could kick my ass and so could Philip. And sure. It was astounding because I was like, I'm going to take a play swing at you. And suddenly I was like, bam, bam. And like, just like, I was like face down. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Like, Anyway, I haven't seen someone get housed that badly since I again got housed when I was at a military summer camp in high school.
Oh my God.
Literally, I was like,
that's a whole story right there.
Okay. Oh dude, it was some indoctrination shit, but I'm fine.
Yeah. You seem fine.
But I do I though. But yeah, so I'm into that shit. I don't know what else I've been doing recently. I'm like looking around because I need like I have, you know what's in front of me that I'm fascinated to read? Jeanette Kahn, one of the greatest icons in comic book history. For folks who don't know, she became in charge of DC Comics at the age of 28 in the 1970s. So for younger folks who are interested in the history of women in comics, Jeanette is an icon.
Yeah.
And she wrote one book called In Your Space, which is about organizing your office and workspaces. And it's on my shelf to read. And I'm fascinated to read it because she is, yeah, I mean, there's never been anyone like her in comics. So that's up next for what I'm into, hopefully.
So in the next time you're on the show, we can talk about that.
Oh, it's really adorable. You think that my to-read list moves that fast.
Sure. There's too much going on.
I got a book that Kieran wanted me to read that I just got yesterday, and I didn't look at the page count. It's like seven. Hold on, since it's not a video podcast.
Sure.
I assumed it was going to be like a short thing.
Oh, boy.
Look at this motherfucker. Fuck you, Kieran.
That's going to take a while. What's it called? Children of Ruin. Nice. Oh, wow. Yeah, that looks dense. How small is the font?
Very small.
Yeah, I bet.
What we have also to the top of my list is the George Hackenschmidt.
Oh, wow.
Wrestling.
Nice. That's cool. You got so much going on. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being on the podcast again. I think I laugh the most of all the guests we've had. You make me laugh the most. Next week, Starward comes out, the third chapter in Heavy Metal Magazine number 308, and you've got Extreme Carnage Phage. You've got so much going on top of that. Where can people follow you on Twitter or Instagram?
I'm at the Steve Orlando on Twitter and Instagram, and that's where you should find me. And also, you can find me in person. We are doing, I should hype it here,
yeah,
August 21st weekend, which might actually be Saturday the 21st, but I don't have the calendar in front of me that weekend. Third Eye Comics in Annapolis. We are doing a big, pardon me, Extreme Carnage signing. It's going to be me. It's going to be Philip. It's going to be Alyssa coming in from LA and Clay Chapman. So we're all four of us are going to be there.
Awesome.
Third Eye, one of the best stores in the country. And if you're listening to this and you can't make it to Annapolis, reach out to them because they 100% will ship anywhere if you want stuff signed by all of us.
Nice.
So keep that on your radars for Carnage fans. And yeah, find me at the Steve Orlando on Twitter and on Instagram.
Thanks so much for your time, dude. This was a blast.
My pleasure as always.